from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspic. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspic, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Coming up on today's show, we'll discuss the Giants' 6-3 loss to the Pirates, time running out here on their season. Logan Webb, another shaky start for him, and then some bigger picture items. I was thinking a lot yesterday after we had that discussion about Farhan Zaidi and how I think that the firing of the 8 pro scouts is just the tip of the iceberg and a sign of things that could be to come. Got me thinking a lot about kind of looking back on the season and kind of reviewing the job that he's done transforming this roster. So I have some data points to discuss about the transformation that has been made with this team. But first, their record with the loss, the Giants fell to 70-76. They're 7.5 games back in the wild card still. The Cubs lost again. So the Cubs are reeling here. The Giants have their opportunity or had their opportunity to gain some ground on the Cubs, but they haven't been able to capitalize so far, losing 2 of 3 to the Pirates in this series. So that's pretty much it. If you can't beat the Pirates at home down the stretch here, you don't deserve to go to the postseason, and that is looking like it's going to be exactly the case. Giants are just 31-40 at home on the season. So there wasn't really too much exciting baseball to talk about from last night. You know, the storyline being Logan Webb's outing. They had a lot of young pitchers pitch yesterday. It was Logan Webb, Burt Smith, Sam Selman, Tyler Rogers, Sam Coonrod, Kyle Bearclaw, and Connor Menez. So none of those guys were on the opening day roster, and most of them weren't here just a couple months ago. So definitely a period of transition for the bullpen right now. And eventually we'll talk about that, but I do just kind of want to look at the bigger picture here. After having that discussion about how this is Farhan Zaidi's show moving forward and it's going to be full steam ahead in his vision in 2020 and beyond, it got me thinking about what has he done with this organization so far. We're approaching a year since he took over. That was in November. So when the offseason comes, we'll definitely do a season in review and talk about all these moves and developments in more detail. But just taking a step back, it's been a while since we looked at some overall offensive numbers or focused on the outfield and their performance this year versus the outfield's performance in recent seasons. So I just did a little bit of digging and found a couple of really interesting nuggets. So we all know that the outfield was very much a weak spot for the Giants in multiple recent seasons. And in fact, just going back to 2018, which was the better of two seasons between 2017 and 18. 2017 is when they lost 98 games. 2018 was a little bit better. They had McCutcheon for most of the year. But overall on the season, their outfielders amassed just 0.4 Fangraphs wins above replacement, which was easily the worst in the National League. You can have guys put up that total, single players, not single outfields, but single players put up 0.4 Fangraphs wins above replacement in the span of a few days. Like in the early part of the season, Cody Bellinger was doing that once every few days. So for that to be their total sum for the entire season of all their outfielders is just absolutely terrible and unacceptable, and it is almost certainly a big reason why Bobby Evans was fired and the Giants really shook things up with their front office. Their outfielders also had a collective 85 weighted runs created plus, which means all things considered, their offensive production was about 15% below average. And when I say all things considered, I am considering the fact that the ballpark hurts them offensively. Weighted runs created plus factors that in. So it's park adjusted 15% below average offensively. Their isolated power, which is just a really strong indicator of pure power production, it's slugging percentage minus batting average. was just 125, which was also second last in the National League, just like the weighted runs created plus. And lastly, their slugging percentage was just 363, which was second to last in the National League. So looking at 2019, I wanted to look at, you know, it took some time. It took some experimentation and some different players being given a look and kind of running through a depth chart to be able to settle on an outfield that kind of stabilized. And I've said all along that I thought when Alex Dickerson showed up on June 21st, that that's really when things kind of got cemented with their roster. And I don't mean that nothing's ever going to change. And obviously it has, a lot has changed since that date. And Dickerson himself is no longer really playing because of the oblique injury. But what I mean is that suddenly they had a group of guys that they felt comfortable with running out there. And it was more than just three guys. They created a little mix where they were comfortable using any of those guys depending on the matchups and the situations. So anyway, since that date, the Giants outfielders have a 506 slugging, which is second best in the National League, a 233 ISO, which is third best in the National League, a 117 weighted runs created plus, which is fourth best in the National League, and 5.1 Fangraphs wins above replacement, which is fifth best in the National League. So literally, we're talking about less than 3 months of the season, five wins above replacement compared to all of 2018, 0.4 wins above replacement. Last year, 15% below average offensively. This year, since June 21st, 17% above average offensively. So a night and day difference, and that the credit has to go to Farhan Zaidi. And, you know, a lot of people whined about the process all along the way, including a lot of prominent writers complaining about the roster turnover. But the roster that was inherited was the roster that put up these dreadful numbers. And we're just talking about outfield here. We could go way more specifically looking at other positions as well, although I would say that a lot of the guys in the infield are just taking up space, and he's not been able to do this same transformation in the infield yet because they're tied up to certain players who are underperforming. But little by little, we are seeing some turnover there. We're seeing Mauricio Dubon instead of Joe Panik. And I just think that kind of trend is going to continue in the infield as well. But anyway, the roster he inherited, specifically in the outfield, was so bad. And then they've shuffled through a lot of different outfielders this season. But it was to get to this point where in the last almost 3 months, they've been one of the better outfields in MLB. So these results are just undeniable. And maybe it's not going to last at quite that level, and Alex Dickerson is hurt, and then Jalen Davis is getting a lot of playing time, and he hasn't played particularly well yet. What can they really expect out of Austin Slater? So there's still a bunch of question marks. I'm not saying that they're set in stone in the outfield. But the fact is, just a dramatic turnaround in an area that was clearly their biggest weakness entering the season is now a relative strength. And so all that complaining and criticism about Connor Joe, Michael Reed, and whoever else they shuffled through, and the players complaining about people being shuffled through, the process has worked. And so it's just undeniable. And I just wanted to take a step back here and point to some concrete numbers that indicate that the process has worked. And that's what we said all along, was that Farhan Zaidi deserves the benefit of the doubt and deserves patience. And it's just really hard to argue with these results. Coming up in the second half of the show, there's actually a couple more indicators of some change that has happened with the Giants, pretty stark indicators that don't get talked about a lot. And we'll also discuss this Giants loss to the Pirates and preview this upcoming game. Just want to remind everyone that anything you're craving, Postmates can deliver. They're the largest on-demand network in the U.S. and offer delivery from all the restaurants, grocery and convenience stores, and traditional retailers you could possibly want or need. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDON. We talk about baseball performance all the time on this show, but what about performance in the bedroom? That's right. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew is the first chewable with the same active FDA-approved ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. They can be taken anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Yes, I actually know someone who has tried this product and they have extremely positive things to report about its effectiveness. The best part about Blue Chew is that it's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So there's no more visit to the doctor's office, waiting at the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness around this topic. Blue Chew is made in the United States and prepares and shipped direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit www.bluechew.com and get your first shipment free when you use special promo code MLB. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's it. Again, that's BLUEchew.com, promo code MLB, and try it. It's free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Okay, as promised, here in the second half of the show, we'll talk about a couple more numbers. Giants have made some big changes. This is a topic that doesn't get discussed a lot, but dramatic changes in this category. And then we'll briefly summarize yesterday's loss and preview today's upcoming game against the Pirates. So this is something that I have talked a lot about, but I don't see it written about very often, if ever. But the Giants were a team that basically hit an above average amount of ground balls for several seasons here when they were struggling. In 2017, which was that first year where the home runs just started to fly at a record pace, the Giants were over 1.35 ground balls per fly ball when the league average was under 1.25. So it doesn't seem like a huge difference, but really it is in terms of what the spectrum is. So this year, the MLB average is all the way down to under 1.2 ground balls per fly ball. And the Giants went all the way down from 2018 to 2019 from 1.3 ground balls per fly ball to 1.2 ground balls per fly ball. So that's a significant drop. It might not sound like much, a 0.1 ground balls per fly ball, but what this essentially boils down to is that they're hitting the ball in the air more consistently. When first being exposed to this information, you might just think it's not necessarily a good thing to hit a fly ball if it's just like a lazy fly ball, and that's a very valid point. But I would say the same thing about a ground ball. It's definitely not necessarily a good thing to just hit a ground ball, because the difference is that when you hit the ball in the air, when they're hits, they're homers and doubles and triples, extra base hits, essentially. When you hit a lot of ground balls, the best you're really hoping for is a single, not to mention the fact that all the defensive shifting has made it more difficult to reach the outfield grass with ground balls. So we've seen a lot of Giants struggle who hit a lot of ground balls. And Joe Panik is kind of the poster child who comes to mind for me. He was just like an automatic ground ball to the second baseman is what it would seem like. So his career ground ball to fly ball ratio is 1.37. And if we look at someone like Mike Yastrzemski, it's 0.80. So anytime you're under one, it means you're hitting more fly balls than ground balls. And consistently this year, the players Farhan Zaidi is bringing in are guys who consistently elevate the ball. And what happens when you consistently elevate the ball is that when you get your hits, they turn into extra base hits and homers. So you're going to get your hits on a certain percentage of your balls in play. So you might as well be hitting the ball in the air and giving yourself a chance for your hits to be converted into extra base hits. As opposed to if you're consistently hitting the ball on the ground, you're still going to get your hits a certain percentage of the time, but then they're often going to be singles. Even a guy like Mauricio Dubon, who we think of as more of a contact-oriented hitter, in his minor league career, consistently had a ground ball to fly ball ratio under one. That was the main downfall of Mack Williamson. He just hit way too many grounders. He was hitting like 2 ground balls per fly ball in his major league career. So it's just a factor that we need to talk about more and think about more when we're analyzing players. I think we all just kind of assume people hit the ball kind of randomly on the ground or in the air or line drives, but it's not true at all. It's very much not random how players consistently elevate or do not elevate the ball. Anyway, we didn't really have time to talk about this game too much. Logan Webb, suffice it to say, was just inconsistent with his command. He was, you know, he only walked one, but he threw a couple wild pitches, looked really frustrated at times. So he needs to like compose himself a little bit more and hopefully, you know, just relax and try to be the pitcher we know he can be based on a couple of strong starts he had early on. A couple of impressive appearances out of the pen yesterday, Kyle Bearclaw struck out the side after working into some serious trouble in the eighth. Connor Menez had two strikeouts in a perfect ninth, but the Giants offense really just couldn't get anything going against the Pirates pitching. Coming up today, it'll be Jeff Samardzija against Joe Musgrove, a right-handed pitcher. Giants lineup features Buster Posey back in there batting second, Evan Longoria back in there batting fourth, Jalen Davis in right field, Mauricio Dubon at second base. So we'll be back with another episode tomorrow talking about today's game. Remember, to get this show every weekday, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. On this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Once again, my name is Ben Caspic. You can follow me on Twitter at @Cove_cast. If you like this show, please consider rating it, leaving a review, and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow, and until then, we'll see you next time.